October 18th, regular board meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District. The board did not meet in closed session, so we have nothing to report. Do we have a consensus on the order of business? Okay, very good. Let's move on then to the approval of the minutes. And we have two sets of minutes, one for October 4th and one for October 11th. How about if we do the October, we'll do them separately, we'll do the October 4th first. Would somebody like to make a motion on that, please?
I'll move approval of the October 4th minutes.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Mrs. Sheffer?
Oh, no.
Okay, seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. I'm assuming nobody from the audience wishes to speak on this. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 6-0. Let's move on then to the meeting of October 11th. I'd like to hear a motion on that, please.
I'll move to accept the minutes of October 11th.
And I'll second.
We have a motion by Mrs. Sheffer and a second by Mrs. Roger for the minutes of October 11th. Any discussion? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries 5-0 with one abstention. Let's move on to presentations and reports. And we have somebody, I don't remember your name.
Eric.
From Pacific Beach?
Yes.
All right. Aaron, I can't see your thing, so I apologize. Aaron from Pacific Beach. Thank you, Aaron.
Had their paperwork in process to start Cuesta College this next semester. And Pacific Beach has also started its, will be starting its work experience education this marking period. This is an elective class offered that combines classroom instruction with paid employment. Successful completion of this course provides an opportunity for students to earn elective credits while earning real-world work experience in the local community. This program is a perfect example of how Pacific Beach is working hard to help students prepare for life after high school, as well as establishing a better working relationship with the local community and businesses. In mock trial news, we will have our first scrimmage with San Luis Obispo High School on November 15th, and we would like to invite all of you tomorrow from 5 to 7 p.m. to our open house. And for any of you who don't think you can make it, keep in mind there will be a free barbecue, so be sure to come. Thank you.
Great. Well, thank you very much. It's always great to hear about what's going on at Pac Beach. Such a great high school. Thank you so much. And as always, you're welcome to stay and listen to what's going on this evening. We value your input, but we also know that a lot of times you have things that you want to do. Go ahead.
Yeah, I do have a place to be. So
okay.
I'm sorry, but I'll have to leave you guys early this time.
Well,
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
I just have a question.
Mrs. Roger?
I'm wondering, do you know a time on the scrimmage with Slo High?
The location will be Pacific Beach High School, but I'm not certain on the time. It might be 7 if I'm remembering correctly, but I'm not sure.
Maybe Mr. Halfman could get that information to us?
You betcha.
Thank you very much.
There we go. We got a you betcha on that one. Okay, great. Well, thank you very much. I'm going to recommend that because the student support services presentation will last about an hour is what I'm guessing. With the board's permission, I'm going to recommend that we move public comment up to this part of the meeting. And then also I wanted to let the board know that we did receive some correspondence from Dr. Julian Crocker about our approved board budget. And as always, I want to point out that he ends by saying, I share your commitment to a high-quality education for all students. I also acknowledge that meeting this goal is extremely problematic given the loss of revenue from the state since the 2007-2008 school year. Making reductions to accommodate this loss of revenue is a difficult task, and he appreciates the effort that we've made to maintain a basic level of service while keeping our district solvent. So again, clean notes from Dr. Crocker, and we appreciate that. So let's move on then to public comment, again, with the permission of the board. I see we have several people who'd like to speak with us. Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. And remember, we have a 3-minute period for public comment. The board will not comment about your comments. If there are questions that need to be asked, I can try to answer them. However, we will not engage in discussion with you, typically because that's not on our agenda, and that would be a violation of the Brown Act to discuss things that aren't on the agenda. So you want to go ahead, Dr. Eisendrath Rogers.
First, we have Mark Schaefer.
Good evening. My name is Mark Schaefer. I'm the Executive Director of United Cerebral Palsy of San Luis Obispo County, and I'm speaking about the elimination of the adult ed program for adults with disabilities. I was a teacher in that program for 12 years, and I'm here to speak on behalf of the 400 adult students that were benefiting from these programs. And I know we went over this last spring, and you made a decision on that. And I understand we're in tight budgetary times, but yet I hear of many teachers that have been hired since that time. And again, the funds that were available up to 2 years ago, when we decided that we needed those funds for adult ed to be used for K through 12, brought a lot of funds to our particular school district because there were so many adults in the program. Now we are eliminating that program, and I think you were told, well, the programs will still continue. The problem is the adult ed teachers were the heart and soul of planning these programs. It's like saying, well, we could hire babysitters to take care of our second grade classes. Yes, it would be cheaper, but these programs are going to be left with teachers. They're not teachers. They're aides that are being paid $9 an hour and will severely impact the program. Also, the teachers that will be let go or being offered positions that will be paying them less than 50% of what they're making right now. And I know I couldn't live on 50% of what I'm...
off of the music program at the middle school and also Morro Bay High School. My son is currently a sophomore at Morro Bay High School. And he's in the jazz band there and also the concert band. He plays clarinet in the concert band, and he plays saxophone in a jazz band. I love music, and one thing that I had hoped to do when I had my son was to pass that on to him, that love of music. So, you know, fast forward to 14 years later, I find out he's going to Morro Bay High School, and I was thrilled to find out that they have an amazing music program there. What's also amazing to me is that my son will come home, and we've been talking about music since he was a little boy, and he'll come home and he'll say, you know, oh, we're working on Duke Ellington today. You know, we're working on a Glenn Miller tune today. And first off, he knows who those people are. I mean, that's incredible. But he's not just reading about those people. He's not just hearing their music. He's playing their music. And that, to me, is an incredible thing. I mean, what an incredible learning activity that is, to be actually playing that music. Not just, you know, opening a book and reading, seeing a black and white photo, you know, and reading about, you know, when Duke Ellington was born. No, he's playing that music. I just think that's miraculous. Anyway, so I just hope you'll continue to support the music programs at Los Altos Middle School and Morro Bay High School. Thank you.
Great, and thank you very much, Mr. Brown. Just so that you know, the Jazz Combos played entertained last night at the Teacher of the Year dinner. There were probably close to 200 people there that got to listen to the fine music that Mr. Bellier and the Combo put together. I know I think every board member here values music education, and we know what a great job Mr. Bellier, Mrs. Wall, and the folks at San Luis High are doing. So thank you for your ringing endorsement of them, because it really is a wonderful program.
It's my pleasure.
Next we have Colby Krotzer.
Good evening, board and staff. Welcome to Los Altos Middle School. I'm Colby Krotzer. I'm a teacher here, a resource specialist, and I've had five wonderful principals here at Los Osos Middle School in my 22 years as one of our Lions. I got 5 years of credit, took a cut in pay when I moved here from L.A. to be in this beautiful area of the Central Coast. But the problem is, I don't know if the principals were doing a good job of grading and evaluating my performance as a teacher and specialist. I've never embarrassed the district. I've never brought any of my cases before administrative hearing. All of my Stillbill evaluations have been exemplary. The formal evaluations, the same. And not to brag, but I'd welcome any of you to look at my personnel file. I'm sure it could be made available. And look at the way the principals have evaluated my job performance over the last over two decades here. I've received even verbal praise, informal notes of thanks. I've even had ex-students stop by and thank me for being their teacher. How rare is that? And it really has felt terrific to be a teacher, particularly here at Los Osos Middle School. It's a rare honor. Yet the majority of you seven trustees evidently have directed your negotiations team to stiff and humiliate me. I am looking forward to and have not experienced for year upon year a fair increase in my remuneration. The overtures to ask for a cost of living increase have been rejected. Everything that I know about the national penchant for demonizing teachers, it never struck me until recently, because in our society, of course, if you're not getting pay, I can't imagine another profession where you get less and less money to take home year after year. That reflects upon less money for me to spend on my grandchildren to prepare for their college and future. Well, this straw, I guess, that broke the record for petty credulity was, I've been commanded by my director of student services to attend meetings downtown, have for years. And in past years, decades really, I've submitted reimbursement for my gasoline costs. If you know my personal penchant, the idea of burning gasoline is anathema to me. I ride my bike when I can. I'm fortunate enough to come from Moore Bay here. It's only a 6-mile commute. But I'm commanded to go downtown. For years and years, those were rejected. I have copies of the rejected notes. We don't pay for people to come to staff meetings. And
okay. Let's move on then to our presentations and reports. Continuing on with that, we have student services support, challenges and interventions for at-risk students. Dr. Prater.
Before we begin this presentation, I'd like to acknowledge Dr. Jackie Kirk Martinez. She just defended her dissertation last week, and we're very proud of her. And while all that's going on, she and Mr. Dowler, along with their team, prepared this presentation for you as stated in the master planning calendar, which keeps us in alignment with our stated objectives for the school year. So with that, Dr. Kirk Martinez, would you like to go forward?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Dr. Prater, and welcome to the presentation tonight. I'd like to thank Dr. Prater for giving us this opportunity to present to you and to the community what we are doing and what we are planning for this year, specifically through the initiatives. I would like to also thank Chris Dowler and Brittany Ineo, Melissa Musgrave as part of the team, along with two of our special presenters tonight, Janet Gould of Del Mar Elementary Principal and Leslie O'Connor from San Luis Obispo High School will also be presenting. Okay. To begin with, for your review, there's some acronyms that you'll hear throughout the night, and I wanted you to be comfortable to understand some of the acronyms as you see through the presentation. And the first acronym is FIT, and that is Families in Transition, our homeless population. Also our SED population, that is the socioeconomically disadvantaged. We're working through certain definitions for identifying and monitoring those two classifications so we can provide the primary supports needed for them to move out of that tracking or that category. English learner, EL population, and also IWIN, you'll see in here in this presentation, and that's individuals with exceptional needs. That's also known as the special needs population, special education population. And then SARB, you'll be hearing from Chris Daller about the School Attendance Review Board. So with that comfort level, I've provided you with a visual to help show you that we have all of these different cultures and supports, and we funnel them through, and we are responding through interventions within our district. And you'll see these are just a few that we'll be touching upon tonight through some of the initiatives. And I will now pass this on to Chris.
So obviously I didn't get enough last month, and I'm back again. And it's really great. It's time to have the support. And last week too. Oh, sorry. And it's really special to have the support of my colleagues behind me. Thanks, guys. All right, so moving on. First, we're going to look at a technical academic definition of at-risk. This is from this book cited at the bottom. It seems to be a quintessential volume on identifying at-risk students and program interventions for them. But it's I don't need to read it to you, but basically an at-risk can be a child at danger of any future negative event. And I think that's important to keep in mind when we're looking at identifying at-risk students throughout the school district. There's several risk factors, which basically any negative factor that can precede a negative outcome, and probably the two most important are chronic poverty and unemployment. I think we see this over and over throughout the district data looking at at-risk students, as that this is a unifying feature looking at at-risk students. Just keep scrolling through them, but any one of these factors can contribute to a student becoming at risk. Okay. The way that I've chosen to measure at-risk students in our district and identifying at-risk students is multi and varied. I mean, you can look at truancy as a measure of at-risk behavior. I think more importantly, though, you can look at chronic absenteeism, and I'll talk about that later. Academic credit deficiency certainly puts students at risk for not graduating. A student, coming effective on the profoundness of, the amount of students that could technically be qualified as at risk in this district. What then I try to do is break down the demographics, because just having a number doesn't mean very much unless you disaggregate that data. And what we look at here is, what I did is I basically took all those qualifiers for high school students. And I basically highlighted the cells where there's a disproportionate representation of that subgroup, of each of these subgroups, in that certain category. So, for example, when you look at truancy of truant students, English learners are disproportionately represented by over 10%, which I found to be a significant percentage. Some of them are overrepresented by a couple percent, but when you're dealing with a small amount of students, I think that percentage isn't really going to be significant unless you get over 10%. It's sort of an arbitrary, level I set, but I thought it was significant enough to note. And what this shows is pretty much socioeconomic disadvantage are disproportionately represented in almost every at-risk category. And I thought that was really important. I do want to note that NM is basically not measured at this point. It can be measured. It's just I've been working IS&T pretty hard, and I want to thank Robin Hayward in helping me collect this data, because it's been a pretty exhausting process. I think it's also important to note that that one of the factors, and I saw on the master calendar that I should mention something about gangs. Gains are a little difficult to measure because we don't actually have a lot of suspensions or discipline data that emerges from gangs. And I can say from my own personal experience in community schools, typically San Luis students from San Luis Coastal didn't identify with gangs. They don't tend to be much of an issue in our schools. And I can validate to a certain extent with data from the county probation department and the county district attorney's office that gangs in San Luis are very minimal in comparison to the north and south parts of our county. And in this county as a whole, very minimal compared to surrounding counties, Kern County, Monterey County, and Salinas County. And if you guys are interested in any more really hard data, I have that. But it didn't flow congruent with the rest of the presentation. But in terms of school-related gang data, we don't have any. Moving on. I think it's important to note that in that last slide, you saw it at the high school level, a lot of disproportionate vulnerable subgroup representation. And I think that's why it's, you know, Initiative 2A, the intentional culture of care, is so important, is to develop systems of intentional support for all students. And I think that's really when you look at research after research after research, it's that sense of belonging that really draws kids to school and be successful in school. And so with that, I thought it would be important to hear from a high school principal about what they're doing at San Luis High School this year to try to develop an intentional, systematic culture of care. So, Leslie.
I'm not as tall as Chris, so you have to bear with me. I would have done my teacher voice there and passed them to Russell and told him to pass them all the way down, but I apologize. Lost my teaching moment. I'd like to thank you guys for having me here this evening. I want to talk about what we're doing at San Luis Obispo High School specific to the intentional culture of care. The packet that you have in front of you contains a lot of great information from our counseling department at San Luis High. I'm not going to necessarily reference anything in your packet right now. Everything will be here on the PowerPoint and I'll be able to talk about. If you'd like to follow up with any questions, maybe tomorrow or throughout next week, I'd love to have the opportunity to sit with you and talk about what you have in your packet. Again, the counseling department and Mrs. Martin put everything together. It's great effort by our team. The four key areas that we focused on for intentional culture of care right now at San Luis High, centered around academic development, obviously career and college, personal and social, and athletics. So I'm going to speak to those four key areas this evening. In the academic world, we've really tried to focus on our EL students. When we talk about all, meaning all, we're having meaningful conversations at San Luis High. What does that mean when we have an opportunity to help all students? At the 9th and 10th grade level for EL students, they have a specific counselor who is a Spanish-speaking counselor. Makes a huge difference for parent contact. Counseling caseloads themselves have been reshuffled and reexamined. Physically, in the office area, we've relocated our counseling staff to one end of the office, and we've put our discipline area in the other area of the office, trying to make counseling a lot more public and our discipline procedures a lot more private. We have counseling caseloads that are organized, or EL, at one end of the spectrum, but also the group that's at the middle and the group that's at the top end. Career and college development, very, very important. At the 9th and 10th grade level, we've had opportunities to have college planning workshops in both Spanish and English. And that's important at the 9th and 10th grade level. To bring parents in, to lay down that expectation right away, we're trying to focus on a college program. We've had over 300 participants at our college program already this year in September. We've also had two workshops and college application workshops, one for the UC and one for the CSU. We had them the last 2 weeks. We had over 250 participants at each. Career curriculum. All of our counselors go into either an English class or a social studies class to really work with our students at the 9th grade level to start to focus on a career curriculum, to really think about what 21st century skills you will need as you progress through high school and post-education. And again, establishing that foothold right away, all meaning all. One of the areas that we're most proud of is the guaranteed sophomore guidance program. Obviously, with 1802, all 10th graders must go through a counseling program. So in January and February, they come into our school. They meet with Mrs. Martin in the guidance center. Then an appointment is made with their counselor. So the parent, the student, and the counselors meet, and they have a very formal plan of what's going to happen with that person through the next 2.5 years of high school. Personal and social development. Again, all of our counselors and our administration are trained in the crisis intervention response program that's been established by the district to really understand what do we do as human beings when a crisis happens, whether it be a crisis at the school site, whether it be a crisis involving a faculty member or students or here in the community. We're only human, but we have to be well enough trained to have an idea of how do we respond to that. We also have the student assistance program, where we really work with our student population to look at our needs assessment. What is it that our students tell us that they need? Three key areas that we've identified for this year: grief group, divorce support, and drug and alcohol counseling. And so we work with trained practitioners in the field with our on-staff counselors to really set up those small groups where students feel safe and we can start to tackle some of those issues. Peer helping, another wonderful program run by our counselor, Mr. Vager, where we have students on campus who provide tutoring and mentoring for other students. They work out in elementary schools and they meet each morning to start to set forth good practices for other people to watch on our campus. And then, of course, the counselors meet with students and parents to discuss ongoing issues that they may have, family-oriented issues or curriculum issues. The fourth area that we've really tried to make a concerted effort with this year is athletics. Obviously, we have approximately about 900 of our 1,454 students participate in athletics. We have to reach out and make sure that our athletes understand that they must follow a certain code of conduct. That starts with me, the principal, talking to the head coaches, talking to as many coaches as possible on campus, having formal meetings, and laying out a level of expectation that we have for our coaches and for our athletes. Coaches, obviously, who are on staff must be that point of contact, directly linking it back to Initiative 2, Intentional Culture of Care, to make sure that they have someone that they can relate to on our campus. All coaches will be attending a training on Monday, October 24th, in our cafeteria for 3 hours with San Luis Physical Therapy, providing education with regard to concussions and concussive injuries, as well as good practices that we should be following from the medical profession. And finally, we have a concussion protocol. We've met with at least 5 athletes who've been involved in concussions through our football program. Before they are readmitted to training in any capacity, they must be released by the medical field. But then their parents and themselves meet with myself, the athletic director, and the student trainer, or the trainer, in the principal's conference room, and we sit and we have an honest conversation for about 10-15 minutes for them to understand, away from the athletic field, what does it mean when you put your person, young man, back into the field of competition. What we're trying to do is bring all of those aspects of all meaning all to San Luis High. So I'd like to thank you for your opportunity here.
And also at this point, I thought it would be important to hear from an elementary school for an example of how the culture of care is being implemented at an elementary school. So Janet Gould.
Good evening. I would like to start by thanking you for, through Initiative 2, increasing the support that we have for school, the funding of school counselors from 50% up to 75%, with the individual sites covering the 25% through our site categoricals. We've been able to increase our counselor this year from 60% to 100%, and at the same time maintaining our primary intervention program, or PIP, at 15 hours a week, and how necessary a counselor is at the elementary school level. And Rose would be here with me this evening, except she's attending a discussion regarding ways to support students with ADHD. Rose has also helped to support our staff in the implementation of something called the Nurtured Heart Approach. And a couple years ago, one of our teachers, Vicki Furness Lawrence, was having a conversation with her daughter, who's also a teacher, about some of her frustrations that she was facing within her classroom. And after her daughter listening to her, she suggested that she look into the Nurtured Heart Approach. a book seminar and working with her class, trying it out later, she was hooked and started sharing some of what she was learning with our staff. Last May, she presented the book Notching It Up, The Nurtured Heart Approach to our teaching staff, and teachers enthusiastically asked me to get them the book and let them start reading it over the summer. So we did that with all certificated and classified staff. And then at the start of this year, we added some professional development for both certificated and classified staff in the Nurtured Heart Approach. And it's basically based on the premises that there's always something right happening in the classroom. And there's three basic stands. The first is to refuse to energize negativity. Absolutely no. Teachers should make their response to acting out and rule breaking boring for students. Stand two is to relentlessly energize the positive. Absolutely yes. Teachers appreciate students in specific ways when they are doing something right or when they are not doing something wrong. Students are recognized for their greatness. And the third stand is absolutely is to clearly but unenergetically enforce limits or absolute clarity. Teachers clearly state the rules and the consequences for breaking rules. If a rule is broken, students are not given energy by the teacher. They just get a quick consequence or a short timeout, which we call a refresh, and then are invited to rejoin the class. In the classroom, teachers are taking and making opportunities to reflect on the greatness of their students. You are following my instructions, which indicates that you are a respectful and conscientious student. I see you are keeping all of your chair legs on the floor, which shows that you care about your personal safety. You are choosing to ignore distractions and focus on your work. That shows great self-control. In our second and third grade classrooms, students are given the opportunity to recognize the greatness of their classmates. There is a star of the day, and students keep their eye on that star, and then at the end of the day, share great things that they saw that classmate doing. In our fifth grade classrooms, three students are recognized each Friday for their awesomeness awards. As Rose and I discussed the Nurtured Heart Approach at Del Mar, perhaps one of the biggest changes that we're noticing is in the attitude of the teachers. It seems that they are less stressed out by the behaviors that are going on in their classroom. They're not entering into battles with students, but are instead really focusing on the positive and what's going right in their classrooms. And the Nurtured Heart is one of many great things that Del Mar is doing to build a culture of care at our school. We understand the importance of educating the whole child and that the child must be in an environment where they feel safe and cared about in order to reach their full learning potential. So instead of talking to you about the many other things that we're doing at Del Mar, I thought I would show you.
Good evening. So a few new things that we've been working on in student support services. One endeavor has been that Chris and I have been working on is creating family resource centers, one here in San Luis Obispo and one that'll be on the coast. Family resource centers are kind of a one-stop shop where families can receive services under one roof and at one location. They can do everything from sign up for insurance, receive counseling services, get free groceries, access and attend parenting classes, and receive case management services. Some of the agencies that Chris and I have met with to begin this collaboration have been the Department of Social Services, Community Action Partnership, County Mental Health, the Office of Child Abuse Prevention, ALPHA, the Community Counseling Center, the Child Development Center, Transitions Mental Health, WIA, which is the Youth Employment Program offered through Cuesta, Drug and Alcohol, Parent Connection, Parent Participation through the Adult School, the Food Bank, and Probation. Families in Transition is the program that works with our district's homeless and foster youth and students who could be at risk at being in one of these populations. At the end of the 2010-2011 school year, we ended with identifying 517 students. That was the largest identified number throughout the county of any of the schools, school districts, sorry. At the beginning of this year, we're at a 7% increase than where we were at the beginning of last year, and this number is rapidly increasing on a weekly basis. The definition of homeless is living in hotel motels, shelters, transitional housing, which includes the women's shelter, emergency foster care, which also includes awaiting permanent foster care placement, living in your car, RV, campgrounds, substandard housing, any unsheltered living situations. And nationally, about 70 to 75% of the population, and our district really sticks with that trend, would be doubled up and our unaccompanied youth. Doubled up being our families, where multiple families living together due to economic hardship, and our unaccompanied youth, also known as couch surfing, staying with different friends, relatives, any community members that'll take them in when they're not with a legal parent or guardian. This vulnerable population also crosses over to our other subpopulations. Out of our numbers, 36% of our FIT students are also EL students, and 14% are receiving special education services. Sorry, I think I went backwards on a few things. Due to the increase of students being identified, we've made a shift to have school site counselors being the first and ongoing point of contact for students and families, with my position in student support services being more of a triage and a support to school sites, and doing case management for our more severe families. This shift has been greatly aided by the addition of our full-time counseling support, as Janet mentioned, which has really made a difference at each of the elementary schools and throughout our district. In addition, we have increased our meetings with administration, counselors, and school site staff to review each student who qualifies for services and see what support is specifically needed and that they're each receiving that support. In fact, Chris and I are already on our second round of meetings with each school site, ensuring that our families are identified and receiving services. Between the district support and state and federal funding, we've been able to provide a variety of tangible supports to families, ranging from school supplies, school clothes, tutoring. We fund before and after school activities and childcare, free lunch, free transportation, scholarships through Parks and Recreation and YMCA, paying for senior expenses, providing case management. This year, Student Support Services will also be working on a competitive grant to continue receiving monies through what's called the Homeless Children and Youth Program, which is also the McKinney-Vento funding, which will allow us to continue providing services and support and also help us with the funding of the upcoming family resource centers, as well as hopefully hiring a bilingual family advocate to serve our Spanish-speaking families. So, thank you, and we've been doing lots of good work.
Thank you.
great. Thank you, Melissa. And I'd also like to recognize Linda Quisenberry, who's here in the audience. And Linda's been real involved with family advocacy, too, especially for our Hispanic families and our families in need here on the coast. So Linda is the spouse of Jim Quisenberry, who's one of our board members. So thank you for all your work, too.
And if I can just add, we're getting our money's worth from Melissa. We had, I think it was 5 new homeless students move into the shelter this weekend that we've been finding school placements for. So this is a new.
Mr. Ungar and I were just talking about this the other day, and there's only 7 very specific items, of which really most students only use and families use 2 items that are excused absences. So they're very specific items. If you're not excused, you're unexcused, which equates to a truancy. So truancy data also supports that our vulnerable subpopulations, except at the EL level, at the second, in the high schools, are not disproportionately vulnerable to truancy. But when you look at chronic absenteeism, which go to the next slide, I think is really important to look at. And there's a definition for chronic absenteeism. It's defined as a student missing more than 10% of school, which adversely affects student academic success. 10% of school is 18 days. And that's for any code whatsoever, whether that's a suspension, unexcused absence, a cut, or, excused absences for being sick. Any attendance code, for 18 days, that's chronically absent from school. And what the research shows is that chronic absenteeism adversely affects academic success, particularly when you look at kindergarten. This is, this has been proven in the study, and I'll get to the study in a second, but particularly at kindergarten, chronic absenteeism in kindergarten is associated with lower academic performance in the first grade for all children, regardless of gender, ethnicity, or socioeconomic status. And if you could go to the next point. For children living in poverty, however, it gets worse. There's a direct correlation between chronic absenteeism in kindergarten and lower performance all the way through the fifth grade. And the study is cited down there as present, engaged, and accounted for. And it's actually probably the most comprehensive look at attendance to date. And it's a pretty fascinating study. Chronic absenteeism, this was done by the Baltimore Education Research Consortium on Baltimore secondary schools. And what they looked at is they looked at chronically absent students in the sixth grade, and they followed them as a cohort all the way through graduation. And what they did, what they found was is that chronically absent students in sixth grade were twice as likely to drop out as everybody else. It's sort of obvious, but that, when it's proven statistically and through data, I think that's really important. So the next slide, what does chronic absenteeism look like in our school district? 848 students. That's the flat number of the whole district. And when you look at the demographics of that, it disproportionately affects students of a lower socioeconomic status, or socioeconomic disadvantaged students are vastly disproportionately affected. If you go to the next slide. When you look at our school sites and what the percentage of absenteeism at our school sites, you see that our schools that technically have the highest populations of lower socioeconomic disadvantaged students have the highest rate of chronic absenteeism. And that percentage is a function of the whole school. And I think that's really interesting to look at, is San Luis Obispo High School has a higher truancy rate than Morro Bay High School, but Morro Bay High School has a higher chronic absenteeism rate than San Luis Obispo High School. It's, Hawthorne, Monarch Grove, C.L. Smith, Del Mar have the highest in the elementary schools. And I think it's just interesting to follow that trend. How to address chronic absenteeism. This is all cited in the study. It's basically what they did is they looked at programs across the country. And they found that programmatically, how do they address chronic absenteeism and what do they do as schools at work? And so what they did for characteristics for effective strategies, we're doing all of the things pretty much that they recommended, or at least starting to partner with community agencies, such as our work through the establishing the Family Resource Center, making chronic absenteeism a priority at the schools, clear communication expectations to teachers, and I thought it was really interesting, begin early, ideally in pre-kindergarten, and I think the district's work in that field is very important. And so with that, another aspect of student support services that we're going to be talking about is RTI. So, Brittany.
Good evening.
So a number of the supports that you have already heard about this evening in terms of families in transition, supports for students who have exceptional needs, if they're homeless, for example, also pertain to students with disabilities. Now, within a medical model, of course, we've supported students for a long time with student success teams. Now, response to intervention is an option for us. RTI squared also is another way of looking at this, response to intervention and instruction, where we can also focus on the general education population in addition to students who have special education supports that require monitoring and support in terms of ELL populations, homeless students, students with attendance needs, and we can make sure that we monitor and track the progress using the data specifically designed to target the needs of that student. So any student who's sitting in that seat, we want to ensure that if we need to hit the help button, this student can get what they need when they need it. Because naturally, if it's a sweatshirt that a student needs to stay warm, it's going to carry over into the academic sphere. If it's a student who needs breakfast in the morning, it's going to carry over into the academic sphere. So the constituency that we have the privilege of serving is going to need our focus and attention, not just through an academic lens, and not just through a lens where we're focusing perhaps on what used to be a more traditional and medical approach model, where we perhaps wait on a diagnosis, or we perhaps wait on looking for a special education intervention, but something that's much broader and something that is larger in terms of a scope and a little more diverse, and we're focused on general education. The RTI squared support system can look and feel and work a lot of different ways depending on that school site. This is a pretty typical and traditional three-step, three-tier model. You may encounter something different depending on the culture of each of the school sites that you visit. Usually Tier 1 and Tier 2 are general education interventions, and we're usually identifying the at-risk group. We've already identified some of those for you this evening, but prevention and intervention is usually the primary goal in Step 1. Step 2, that same theme continues, but we're collecting a lot of data, ideally in Tiers 1 and 2, and using that data to tell us what we need to do as a next step with that specific student. Step 3, or Tier 3, with this longitudinal data, because we're trying to foster a data-rich culture, we're going to be able to have useful information to determine if we need to make a referral, if we need to include or align ourselves with perhaps a partnering local agency, or if we need to use other resources within our district to support the student. Within a data-rich culture, you may encounter something comparable to what you're seeing here on the screen, which is us tracking each student individually. Now, of course, this takes time, but we're proud of this at each of our school sites. And naturally, it's going to be diverse again, like I talked about earlier. When we are taking each of our students and monitoring what they need and identifying specifically what interventions in an RTI model are required, it may be academically driven in, let's say, mathematics, for example. It may be something that's more socially supported or required. This is a RTI wall at one of our elementary sites where we have each student represented with a specific card, and there's a whole legend that accompanies this on an opposing wall within this particular schoolroom that you can't see, unfortunately, but there is a method to tracking each of these students on one of these cards academically, socially, and in terms of English language arts and mathematics long term to support the student and monitor their progress. And I'll go ahead and turn it over then to my director, Dr. Kirk Martinez, who will explain to you the continuum of service and the differences between the RTI model and special education.
When we look at the Tier 3, we have supported the student in Tier 1 and Tier 2. We've looked at all of the interventions, and you'll hear later on through a first reading of a revised board policy is the student success team. Once we have progressed through the student success team and we have monitored the progress over a period of time in Tier 1 and Tier 2, we may need to move to assessment to look at some identifications of some eligibility for support services under Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, also known as IDEA. We have a continuum of services for students in general education all the way through special education, out-of-class supports as well as in-class supports. That means we may have a student that has speech articulation, language development, and they need to be in a cluster of work with a cluster of students working on language development, and they may need to have specialized instruction in a pull-out model versus maybe a resource specialist going into the general ed classroom and supporting them with a language development class. So we have both options available and specific to each student. We also have specialized placements, as you well know, of our special day classes, resource programs, and they're supported in the least restrictive environment is established in each student's IEP. We monitor their progress as often as the general education student is monitored as well. If the student's not making progress, we adjust their instruction, we adjust the goals to meet their needs wherever they are. And again, as I've said, the least restrictive environment, that's our initiative, an intentional culture of care in the least restrictive environment. And then, as I stated, IDEA and the state law requires us to do all of these things, but we also intend to do this throughout the whole entire district, and we have a common understanding and thread throughout the district with a continuum of services through RTI and our starting with our student success team. Something new that's happened this year that we're very excited to show you tonight is technology in the schools. We are starting with technology in the schools with a unique situation, and we're increasing our technology through serving a student with special needs. The student is unable to participate in a classroom environment. He has an immune deficiency as well as another deficiency that I'm not going to explain here tonight, but he's unable to participate with the general population. However, he has the desire, he has the ability to work with his classmates. So he has never seen the inside of a classroom. He has not spoken with a group of students. And so through planning, and I again thank the technology department as well as the school site supports, that before school started, we have planned through the summer, and we were able to bring this student to school in a office classroom of his own, and we developed a Skype program. He is Skyping into his kindergarten classroom. He has a general education teacher. The classroom also has the Skype the Skype program on a computer, and sitting on a table like this with a computer monitor only, he is being seen by all of his classmates. The look on his face when he saw all of his classmates, he has learned all of their names, they know him, they go over to the monitor, they communicate with him, they show each other projects, and it all means all. This was very exciting, and the parents are very grateful to the district to have this opportunity to enhance technology and to give every opportunity to their student, to their child. So when we talk about all means all, as you visit all of the school sites, look for some of these or all of these intentional cultures of care, supporting through attendance, families in transition, transportation, special needs, RTI walls. You'll see a thread and a common theme throughout all of our schools. You can speak to all of the teachers. They will all understand these common themes throughout the district. The principals would love to sit down and talk with you about all of the different activities and responses to interventions that they're providing at their school district or in their schools. And it will look different because all means all, but very different at every school site. So we are available for any questions that you might have.
Questions from board members? Boy, I think you've... Oh, Mrs. Sheffer.
I simply want to thank you again for the work you've done and how the attention you're giving, the depth and breadth of attention you're giving and information you're providing and your ability to convey this data and share with us what you're doing. It's very meaningful. Thank you very much.
I want to second what Ellen, Mrs. Sheffer is saying, and what my sense is that we've taken this data and we've sort of turned you into investigative reporters and private detectives, and you're digging deeper and finding more stuff, and it's really wonderful. And just in my last, I think we now have a new definition of an online class. So I really appreciate everything you're doing.
Thank you.
Great. And again, on behalf of the board, I want to thank everybody who participated tonight. I think we really got some good information. And it's really nice to see the initiatives in action. So thank you all for that. Also, I just wanted to take a second. I'm assuming that a lot of you folks are here for Mr. Miller's class. Is that correct? And we want to welcome you here to our board meeting. I hope you're learning some things about modern schools and the way things are done. I'm getting a chance to see some of the great things that we're doing here, and hopefully you'll continue to be inspired in your careers as new teachers. So welcome, please. We'll move on to our superintendent's updates. Dr. Prater.
Thank you, President Unger. I would like to just commend Dr. Kirk Martino. We should know more by week's end, and you know, she's a symbol of all the things we're doing so well as a district. And as she spoke last night, really she is a representation of what public education is about. And that coupled with this presentation tonight, I'm just honored to be a part of that. So I'm just publicly acknowledging her once again. So thank you.
And for my part on the state budget update, there really isn't much to update. Status remains the same. Nothing much is changing. So rather than go over tired old territory about the state stealing all of our money and how they continue to do nothing in their jobs, I think I'll just leave it at that.
Questions, anyone?
How much does it cost to do nothing?
All right. We'll move on then to item number one, determination of sufficient textbooks and instructional materials. Mrs. Dalkis-Camp.
Thank you. At our last board meeting, we reviewed the status of our textbook sufficiency requirement. And since then, our department staff has verified with each school principal that every student has the textbooks and instructional materials required by law. And so tonight, we come to you to request your approval of this resolution.
Great, and I'll bring it to the public to see if anybody wants to comment on this item. Seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board for discussion. Mr. Buckman, and by the way, this is a resolution.
First of all, I'd really like to comment on the quickness that the district, the rapidity that the district took to respond to these needs, and it just goes on to show that the administration is working hard to work with the schools. I also have a quick question, mm-hmm. Or clarification. It's been how many years since we've actually replaced all the textbooks? I mean, we used to be on, what, a six-year cycle? Or
yes, seven-year cycle in different areas. We had our last adoption was mathematics about 3 years ago, and then we held off on our English language arts adoption based on the state budget and then district budget concerns also, and that was allowed within the law.
So just to add that to Mr. Miller's report, what Rita said, it's just been so long since we've been able to replace textbooks. I'm just worried that some of the history textbooks are not even up to date with what's going on in the last few years. Thanks, Rita.
Any other comments from board members? Mrs. Roger?
I don't have a comment, but if there are no further comments, then I'll move approval of Resolution 051112.
Okay, we have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
It's been moved by Mrs. Roger and seconded by Mr. Quisenberry to approve Resolution Number 0511-12. Mrs. Holmes.
Mrs. Roger.
Yes.
Mr. Quisenberry.
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer.
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Passes 6-0.
Thank you.
Okay, let's move on to item number 2, which is a resolution supporting the day of the special educator. Dr. Prater.
On December 2nd, 1975, President Gerald Ford identified Individuals Disabilities Act, which we know as IDEA, and he signed this into law. This resolution acknowledges the special educators in our country and specifically in our district who work with those with students with special needs. And this is on December 3rd, 2011, that we will celebrate this the third anniversary of this Day of the Special Educator. And I'm asking the board to pass this resolution in acknowledgement of that.
Is there anybody from the public that would like to speak to this item? Okay, and I'm just going to say that this was something that was, I guess, brought forward by CARS Plus, which is the California Association of Real Estate. Yeah, resource specialists, of whom my wife is one of them. We've been very fortunate in this county to have people representing our district on their state level and on their board. And it's a great organization, and I think the Day of the Special Educator, it's appropriate that we bring this forward on the night that we're talking about our initiative number 2, our culture of care, which is clearly, as we saw tonight, part of it is special education. Is there anybody that would like to make a motion, or do we have further discussion on this item?
Mr. Buck.
I'd be honored to make the motion to approve resolution number 061112.
I'll second.
We have a motion by
bullying and the impact that it has on all of us. And so I'm asking you to adopt this resolution to bring our district into that acknowledgement and move us forward.
Is there anybody that would like to address the board on this item? Okay, seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Dr. Eisendrath Rogers.
I move that we adopt resolution number 071112.
We have a motion.
I'll second that.
Seconded by Mr. Quisenberry. And I do want to add that I get these legal bulletins on sort of a regular basis. And one of the ones that I got today talked about changes in the education code, which are going to really revise schools' responses to bullying and really put some real weight behind bullying prevention. So I think this is absolutely timely on that. Mrs. Holmes?
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers? Mr. Quisenberry?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger? Mrs. Sheffer? Passes 6-0.
Let's go to item number 4, and we have a revised item number 4, approval of kindergarten through 12 K-12 single plans for student achievement for 2011-2012. Mrs. Delkiskamp.
And if I can just jump in before they start, before Rita and Amy start, we have most of our plans, single plans for student achievement brought for the board tonight. Morro Bay High School, we still need to do some work aligning the good work that their school site council has done with their plan with our LEA plan. So we will be bringing Morro Bay High Schools at a subsequent evening for approval. I'm probably stealing some thunder, but I remember, I think it was my first meeting sitting on this side of the table. The board seemed to have a real interest when we brought these plans last year to figure out some way, is there some way to kind of put this into alignment so we can make sense of instead of a sum of parts, the whole. And I think that they've done good work in attempting this because it's not easy. And so what you have here is a format that I think is very closely aligned to the initiatives for student success, the SMART goals that we've developed, and the schools have worked diligently to try to put it in that place, and so have our directors. You'll also see you know, numbers that get kind of overwhelming in tables and charts, and they can be kind of confusing because we have zeros and 100% and small percentage growths and large percentage growths. And I think, again, it's reflective of the fact that we have very diverse populations in our schools. We have schools who have already met their targets that the district has set, and those that have room to grow, and those that, who don't even have significant populations to the same degree as others. And so just as we're trying to our best, I think, to kind of put a format together that makes sense for the board to understand this, we're also trying to, our school principals are working hard with their school site councils to figure out how best to annualize targets and really make sense of what we're trying to do in terms of improving student achievement and making growths in all of our areas while also kind of respecting the autonomy of our schools. So I think Amy and Rita have done a admirable job in kind of a first blush at doing this way, and so I'm looking forward to hearing about it.
And I would be remiss if I didn't recognize Mrs. Amy Shields, who is our Director of Elementary Learning and Achievement.
Okay, so as we do annually, our district and our school staff have worked together to present our single plans for student achievement to you for approval. This process includes a review of student achievement data and an alignment of local, state, and federal funds to support school goals that align with our district strategic plan initiatives.
And as Mr. Robinette mentioned, you're going to notice a different looking form this year with the goals in the packet. This is a result of our principals working with their school site councils to revise their plans so they closely align with the local educational plan, the LEA addendum. A result of this aligning process is we are now able to share SMART goals with you from our initiatives and show you how that they have been developed at each of our school sites in hopefully easy-to-read tables. This is in response to a request from the board to make this large amount of information and data a little bit easier to read and hopefully to understand as well. At this time, we are going to be highlighting a few of our schools, and so we're going to ask a few of our principals to come up and share what they've been doing, and we'll begin with San Luis Obispo High School.
Thank you again for having me. I'll speak briefly to San Luis Obispo High School. I want to focus on the three R's as well as the three C's, even though the R's aren't mentioned in the slide, relationships, relevancy, and rigor. When we look at algebra and English language arts, we're really focusing on establishing relationships.
Thank you.
Is this pick a school? I'm a little nervous
yes,
here with
please.
It.
Hang on. Oops. Oh, it's down here. Jeez, Louise, Rita. Just trying to pick this right there. Yes.
It's a little intimidating speaking after Aaron Albertson anyway. Is that young man smooth or what? I'm thinking about getting a public relations position going at Pacific Beach. If you call with a concern, he'll just have a little headset and he'll just answer it for you. Absolutely. A couple of exciting things that are happening at Pacific Beach, and again, thanks to the board to their insight, we've expanded our counseling service from one day a week to 3 days a week, and kind of the inside joke in the past used to be you could only have a crisis on Monday, because that was the only day the counselor was there, and if you had it on Thursday, just kind of hang on to it till next Monday. Now we have a counselor 3 days a week, and we've been able to spread that out so that we really are able to provide a significantly greater service, and luckily we're able to hire an outstanding counselor, and it's really making a difference. And another important addition is the work experience class. As you realize, Pacific Beach operates on a half-day schedule for students. They're either a morning or an afternoon student. So they have a chunk of time when they could be doing other productive work. Many, many of them do have jobs, and now we're able to engage them in a formal process where they can learn more about the work environment, and they can also get credit for the work that they're doing. So it's a win-win all across the board. So exciting things at Pacific Beach High School. I did want to also thank Rita for her teaching skills in teaching me through this process. It's been a long time since I've engaged in this particular process. It's changed a lot since I did it last, and Rita has been very patient.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mr. Halfman? I wondered if I could just ask, with your expanded counseling services and your fairly small population, do you have a sense of how many students might be availing themselves of counseling services?
The
percentage
woman,
a number?
I never see the counselor unoccupied, so she's busy every minute that she's there. Some cases are a little bit bigger, and they take a longer, and some students are in and out in 2 minutes, but it's a constant flow of students.
And she's working at your site, sort of helping Melissa Musgrave? Musgrave?
She is our counselor.
She is your person. She's putting your students in touch with services.
Absolutely.
And your family's in touch with services.
And addressing their counseling needs.
Terrific. Thank you.
Good evening, everybody. I wanted to begin first by formally thanking the board for giving me the opportunity to serve as the principal at Los Osos Middle School this year, my first year, so I wanted to thank you all for that and use this format to do that. This year, pulling from our plan, again, I'm not going to talk about the details of the form that you see in front of you, but what I've asked us to implement this year and we're working on is an EL, individualized learning plan. In other words, we're taking the concept of an IEP for special ed students, and we're applying that to our EL students. And the reason for that is my interest in digging deeper and collecting specific data on the services that we're providing for our EL students. The goals of this form are to allow for students, there's an area for students to establish goals and reflect on those goals, our EL students, on a regular basis throughout the year using the demographic data that we will update at the top of the form, grades, progress in their intervention classes, those types of things. It's going to track the interventions and supports that we're providing for our EL students and dipstick at different times during the year as to how effective those things are so that we can monitor and adjust our services that we're providing for our EL kids throughout the year. And also, we're going to use this form to celebrate success with these kids. So as we go through the year and they take place in these intervention opportunities at our school site here at Loams, we'll also be able to sit down with them to do this because of your support in adding another additional EL aide on our site. So right now, every day, our EL kids are seeing another person impacting their learning every day because of your support. So I want to say thank you for that as well. I'll introduce my colleague, Diane Frost.
Okay. Well, there's more stuff to come through. Sorry. I'm Diane Frost. I'm at Laguna Middle School. We've got a number of things that we're proud of through our SPSA. We've got new intervention classes on campus. We're definitely looking at our culture of care, new clubs and opportunities after school. But what I wanted to highlight today was our new video production class. This class obviously looks at initiative number 5, which is developing the world-class science, technology, mathematics, engineering. It looks at number 6 with the accelerated opportunities for our kids. It also looks at number 8 where we're talking about the classroom of the future. But I don't think we can forget initiative number one. We are also hitting the substantial gains we want to make with our at-risk kids. Our video production course helps kids connect to campus. We really think that this is a course that's going to help our kids come to school every day. It's a dynamic class, it's an engaging class, and it's a class where kids have success. We're able to use our PEG funds to fund this class. We've put it into our seventh grade wheel, so after this year we'll have 100 students at least who have gone through this program. Technology and equipment that they'll become familiar with. They'll be using editing software, sound equipment. They'll be familiar with HD technology, script writing. They'll also know about shot composition. We are already making PSAs for our campus and for the community, so our kids have been very active only after 8 short weeks. And I did want to show you a very short video made by this class. So how am I going to do that? Let's see. I'm going to do. You got it? I think it's F5. Thank you. Yes. I totally need a seventh grader.
Action. That's what we're about. Video production. 2011.
Thanks for coming to video production. That's a wrap.
Gives you an idea of what the kids are doing. We've got one on no gum on campus. We've got one on no bullying on campus. Just a number of things that hit a lot of things that are important at a middle school. So we're proud of that. Thank you.
Next, we've got our elementary principal. I think it's you, Rick Mayfield.
Waiting to see his name. There you
go. Good evening, Rick Mayfield, Pacheco Elementary School. Like a lot of the schools, we've added a literacy coach this year. Being a language school, language is our focus, and it's really important that we implement comprehensive literacy program in an articulated kindergarten through sixth grade fashion. So we elected to go with a full-time literacy coach. When it comes to a coach, it's not just the expertise that person has, but the ability to communicate that expertise to other people. It's a difficult position to be in, and we're very fortunate to have Marley Schmidt serving as our literacy coach. It's a sea change, you know, for a teacher to come out of a classroom and step into the role of advising, working with, collaborating with teachers is a big shift. And so it's going very well, but very well does not mean easy. So there, people are adjusting to this new system. We've had a lot of questions, and questions are great. Our staff meetings have a whole new look to them, and I'm really enjoying sitting back and watching the faces and the action in the staff room. So there's a lot of exciting, great things happening with literacy in our coach. She works with teachers to improve literacy instruction. That's great bang for your buck. Improve the quality of the teacher in front of the classroom. She recreated our after-school ELD program, which was pretty traditionally based previously, and we're using a reader's workshop model now. It serves not only to help those English learner students advance their literacy skills, but also teachers have an opportunity to come in after school, and we use it as a training workshop so that they get to see what a reader's workshop looks like. Comprehensive literacy is not a kit, and it does not come with an instruction manual to say, here's how you do comprehensive literacy. So for many of our teachers, they're saying, okay, Reader's Award for these initiatives. When Eric came to us and the cabinet came to us, said, we're going to have high expectations, tell us what you need. And when we threw out things like a preschool, a full-time coach, we could hardly believe that all those things would happen. So thank you for staying the course. I would ask for patience. It's going to take some time for these things to be effective. But thank you for your support.
I'm going to hit Culture of Care again with Bishop's Peak Teach School Plan.
intertwine through all these things. There's the people in the, and you've heard the thanks, and I want to give my gratitude again. With our intervention person, our counselor went from 60% to 100%. These people really are reaching out to our students. Dr. Prater mentioned Elaine Rosenfield, but when you think of the intentional care, that's Elaine. She goes out of her way, and she's symbolic of many of the staff members that we have. Some of the things highlighting the counseling, Mary Kay Stratton is our school counselor, and she is absolutely phenomenal. One of the things I'm wary of is I hope it never goes away because she is so busy so quickly. She came to me after the second week and said, I don't know how I did it before on 60%. But she's working some of the keywords up there, banana splits is kids that are going through a divorce. I heard a funny story the other day that kids have been lying to her for years that their parents are divorced just so they can come to lunch with her once a week. So I thought that was pretty entertaining. Some of the other things out there, PALS, she works with kids, our upper grade kids, to go out to the playground and buddy up with the smaller kids that might be a little bit more isolated. Conflict managers are pretty self-explanatory, but she just trained them for a day. They go out there, they have a script. They're working with the kids to help solve minor problems on the playground. We've had good fortune this year of working with a fraternity and a sorority, just coming out and volunteering out on our playgrounds. Again, just looking for those kids that aren't actively involved with other games or with other kids. And, of course, the crux of her, she has kids in her room all the time, small groups, large groups, all kinds of different focuses. Also up there, we have a phenomenal PTA and boosters that have done some things to connect our kids and our families to our school. With Teach, the families are coming in at fourth grade. The kids are brand new. They've done mixers, ice cream, socials. Our PTA, which is Bishop's Peak, has done new family orientations. They do a program where they buddy a family to all new families, and they just connect with a phone call. Do you not understand this? Well, our carnival's coming up. Here's what the school carnival is. So we just want to highlight both those groups are fantastic. Bobcat families are these kind of the research shows that if you have one adult that cares for you, in elementary school that's pretty easy, but we have a teacher and they're going out of their way. But also we pair them up with one other, either a paraeducator or a teacher on site. They meet monthly, they do games and activities. And not only do they connect to that teacher, but they connect to older kids, younger kids. And it's a really unique program that I think other elementary schools in our district have as well. Student recognition programs, we're trying to pump up our attendance. We're trying to recognize kids when they're doing things well. We want to catch them doing the right things. And lastly, community outreach. Both schools have done community action projects. Last year, Teach had a Big Brothers, Little Brothers Day where they had the organization come in. We kind of just put on fun games for them to participate in station just to create a day of focus there. Last year, Bishop's Peak did recycling, and they were able to put money towards a dog that helped a severe nut allergy kid that would go into a school down in Napomo with the child. So both schools are actively doing that as well as the individual projects as well. So thank you very much.
Well, we hope that gives you a few highlights from our SPSA plans, and we wanted to open up if you had any questions. We've invited our principals to be with us tonight. Or
Mrs. Roger.
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation. It was very well done and informative. And although I'm willing to take all the thanks you'll give me, Dr. Pruitt, the board really doesn't have anything to do with those hiring decisions. So you earned that. You earned that on your own. But I'm delighted that you're here, and I hope it goes well for you. In going through these plans, one thing kind of jumped out at me in the tables, and that was really one school. If I'm reading things correctly, sort of caught my attention because their goals for improvement were consistently higher than other schools. And so I wonder.
And we talked just briefly about that.
We're very optimistic about our numbers, about how we're going to be able to improve those. Data collection, we're doing an intervention model where the teachers are teaching with pacing guides and doing a 6 to 8 week interim teaching lessons, and then we have a post-test. We look at those post-tests. We run through Scantron. Each of those tests have questions are based on a particular skill, and then we have a double dip for students who need help in those particular areas, and so that means they're getting their regular instruction plus a double dip, and we have a skill builders class after school, and we think we're optimistic. We think we're going to do it. So I asked Dr. Prater, hold us to the fire. We're going to go for it, and we're going for it.
Well, I thank you. I think you will achieve it. And I think you, your staff is to be commended for really buying in and getting on board. And that I'm impressed that you put it down on paper and were willing to really go for it. Thank you so much.
Well, we have a long ways to go. And we have a highly at-risk population.
I'm so prepared to slap you around at the end of the year.
We have a lot of room for growth, so we're being very optimistic. But okay. Thank you.
Thank you, and thanks for coming up with no notice.
And I would point out, I think that Hawthorne has the highest percentage of socioeconomically disadvantaged students of any of our elementary schools.
So. They are highly at risk at Hawthorne. Yeah.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers, and then Mr. Bruckman.
I noted that the flat number of I'm looking for Chris. Oh, there you are. The flat number of elementary students who are in the chronic absenteeism category, it's actually higher than the middle school flat number across the board. And so that leads me to the conclusion that the families of those students have more to do with their absenteeism than the students themselves. And so I'm struck by what Mr. Block presented just now of the buddy families, and I'm wondering if we're looking at a way to engage PTA and other parenting groups to help other parents. Just check in, see if I can help you get your kids to school today.
Yeah, what we've done, see, I remembered this time. Thanks. What we've done is we've basically, you know, we've been in a pretty... Since I came on in July, I've been looking at data. And Robin Hayward, again, thank her tremendously. I've been working very closely, probably for her sake too closely, and bugging the heck out of her, but to try to get this data and to disaggregate it. And it's been an extensive process to the point where, like, just we're kind of settling on some big concepts and the overall narrative for the whole district in the last week. So now that we have that, we've identified, you know, flat numbers, percentages, ratios, you know, looking at subgroup populations. And the intention at this point in my plan was to move forward, you know, Jackie and myself going around and meeting with principals and talking about specific programs to look at engaging students at all grade levels, and then trying to bring that level of awareness, you know, district-wide and find some commonalities and programs that we could maybe work with at district-wide. It's the intention. And so it's a long range plan at this point. But yeah, that's a great program. My kid goes to Bishop Speak. He loves it, so it's fantastic.
Yeah, I don't have so much as questions. Thank you, Chris. As I do comments, I remember the my first exposure to the initiatives in Dr. Prater's office, and him flashing up on the wall things like 50% improvement in. You know, just like over a series of years, and as I thought about it, it was like, well, but that's spread out over a series of, you know, years, and I'm looking at this now, and I'm realizing that it was accurate and true, and the amount of increases, if we keep this pace, will get us there, and I really appreciate the school sites working on that and embedding that into what they've done in their single plans. I also would like to thank Mrs. Delkiskamp and Mrs. Shields. Normally, the single subject plans almost needed a notebook this size just to hold them, and were hours of reading. And it seems like you've been able to capture the nut of it and bring it down to us at an understandable level, which I really find helpful. And then the other thing, linking this to the initiatives. It just makes it so easy to see that we're on the right path, and just really want to thank you guys.
Is there anyone else from the board who would like to speak to this item? I don't think I went to the public. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item? Okay, seeing no one, I'm going to bring this back. This is an action discussion item, so we can go ahead and accept item number 4 as revised if that is the board's desire. Would someone like to make a motion on this?
Can we applaud the students?
Let them all go.
Yeah, they're all good. Mm-hmm. So extra credit for you three.
Okay. Mr. Pinkerton.
All right, Mr. Unger, thank you. CSBA brings 4 new policies, new federal regulations. So in this case, it's a lactation accommodation. And so for us, kind of wanted to bring this to the board, get you to review it today as a first reading, and hopefully you'll want to approve it. You know, we want to do everything that we can in terms of abiding by federal rules and regulations. We also want to make it as easy as possible for our new mothers to return to work. And so this is something that affects new moms. And I actually, as when I was a principal of the high school, I had several teachers that came back to work that actually needed, you know, some assistance and kind of talked to me about it and how and where and how we can do this. And so this is just the first step to provide that ability for them, for our staff.
Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item? Okay, seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Board members, do we have some discussion on this? Mrs. Roger.
Yeah, I just have a question. This is, for me, eminently reasonable. Yeah. And the only question that I have is the section where it says, the employee shall be provided a private location other than a restroom, which is in close proximity to her work area. And I'm wondering, are we able to do that in all of our schools? I mean, we have nurses' yeah. offices, but they're not necessarily in close proximity to the work station. Will there be a little flexibility to...
Yeah. And I would say it would depend on the situation in the school sites. Some might teach their own classroom, worked at times where they could lock the door. So times, you know, prep periods necessarily for secondary staff rooms, things like that. So it does take a little bit of planning, and the teacher does have to, I would say, and it talks about in the plan, they have to meet with their principal, meet with their supervisor, kind of figure out how this is going to work. But we will make every accommodation we can to make sure that it is possible for them.
Okay. I think that's great. Thank sure. you.
Discussion from other board members. Shall we go ahead? We can make this a first reading, or we can bring it to a vote right now. What's the preference of the board?
Well, I move that we adopt.
Okay. Then we have a motion by Mr. Quisenberry.
I guess my light's on. I'll second.
And a second by Mr. Buckman. Any other discussion from the board? All in favor? Aye. Carries 6-0. Let's move on to item number 6, proposed revisions to board policy 6164.5, instruction student success teams. Dr. Kirk Martinez.
This is perfect timing. Student success teams, as you can see, it hasn't been revised since 2003. And the revisions are to add language for the monitoring and the progress and the interventions that we are doing in our district already. So perfect timing to bring this forward to you. Changing cooperation to collaboration. We're not asking for cooperation. They do cooperate. We're asking for the collaboration to meet the needs of all students. So I would take any questions that you might have.
Mrs. Roger. Oh, wait. You know, let me bring it back to the public first. Is there anybody from the public who'd like to address the board? Seeing no one, Mrs. Roger, and then Mr. Buckman.
Thank you. Dr. Kirk Martinez, congratulations.
Thank you.
In reading through this, the revision of the board policy, it reads, the superintendent or designee shall establish a process for initiating referrals of students for student success team. I know, do we currently have a policy would be my first question.
Yes, this is the policy that needs revision. So this is what we have. The underlying part is what we're already doing. And if you don't mind, I'd like to explain a little bit about that, because I think you're asking superintendent or designee shall establish a process. We have had a student success team referral packet and process and training every year. We have multiple student success team meetings every year at every site. I believe there was approximately 877 student success team meetings this last year. Sorry. The number came to me as I was saying approximately. So, and this year, we revised the format of the student success team packet, and we brought in the data director, because the data director program has all of the information we need.
What's T for a student?
I can tell you it is not only academics. Many times it's for behavior, looking at alternative interventions mm-hmm. or supports. It's for absentees. It's for truancy. Many times it's for the academic parts, but sometimes there's a behavior that is triggering the poor academics. And so they look at the behaviors and they're going, oh, we need to look at the academics as well. And so coming to expulsions, it really depends on, is it the first, third time that has occurred? Is it the first fight? And we want to look through the entire cume. So not having a student success team, I would ask the same question, but I would look at what is the incident that they're up for expulsion.
Well, sometimes we will see a particular incident, but then we'll look back and there's a history of behaviors that could have, perhaps should have prompted someone along the way to say, I think we need to get together and talk, see what we can do, because we're beginning to see some trouble. This child is having a difficult time. And often there have been numerous SSTs. You know, it's each case is different. But I'm hopeful that, you know, this will establish, in establishing this process, we'll be able to get to our students, some of our students, earlier so that we can begin interventions.
Absolutely. And I think updating this, as well as streamlining the SST data, rich data culture, will also support bringing the attention of response to interventions, looking at behaviors more so than we have, 5-7 years ago. It is really brought to the forefront of many discussions. And parents can request student success team meetings, as well as anybody on campus. There's a lot of different triggers, and people on, lunchtime duty people have also looked at behaviors at recess and going, something's going on, and then the teacher would say, yeah, I agree. Let's look at a student success team meeting.
I think most parents don't know that they have that option. They don't even know what a student success team is or does or means, but they might go to their counselor or their child's teacher and say that they're perceiving a problem, and then it would be the teacher or the counselor, whomever, would follow through with, well, what this is available to us, you know, would you be interested in having an SST for your child?
Absolutely, and I will take that into consideration to make sure that we inform the sites on how we can get that information out clearly, you know, on the websites, the newsletters, and I will make sure that, you know, the next news rounds of newsletters, that they are fully aware of the student success team meetings that we
Great.
Have.
Thank you. Thank
Absolutely.
You very much.
Mr. Buck.
Thank you, Mr. Egger. Jack, I don't know if you planned this or it just happened, but I find this incredible, the concurrence of this board policy coming on the night that we just spent going through. It couldn't have been planned better. I mean, the Caring for All and several others of the initiatives that the administration and the board have dealt with. And I'm just wondering if somebody from administration leaked our initiatives to CSBA and then they wrote this paragraph, because so much of it mirrors what we have. And again, I'm in favor of this and waiting to hear some other comments.
Thank you, you, Dr. Kirk Martinez. I just once an observation and once a question. The observation is that as a teacher, I have participated in many SSTs, and the observation is that sometimes at the secondary level, certain teachers bear a heavier burden in terms of attending these. I don't know if you want to call it a burden, but they seem to have more students that require SSTs in their classroom. So that's just an observation. And then at the secondary level, usually you have their different subject area teachers, maybe not all of them, but a good majority of them, and a counselor. My question is, what does that look like at the elementary? How is that meeting different?
Good question. At the elementary site, it varies from site to site. Counselors attend. The principals are primarily in attendance. General education teacher, depending upon the area of need, if it's a written language or a communication concern, they may have the speech pathologist or resource specialist sit in to guide or advise or suggest some interventions. They have intervention specialists. The counselors attend, so it really depends, but the teams tend to be a little bit larger at the elementary level, and there could be different reasons.
I think what we're calling marathon SSTs, where we support the schools by having a substitute or two or three substitutes come into the school, and we don't like to use subs a lot, but this is a really good use of substitute teachers, where literally they'll schedule these meetings all day so that teachers can attend while we have substitutes roving in and out of classrooms. And so we accomplish a large number of student study team meetings in a single school day, doing these two or three times a year at most of our elementary sites. Now, we have to figure out how to do that with the secondary sites, but it's a trickier beast.
Okay. And I would just point out that student success teams are a regular education function, not a special education function.
Absolutely correct.
Would you like to comment on that and why that's so important?
yes, it's the first intervention to discuss as a general education student. And we want to look at all of the interventions and monitor those interventions before we move into a special education assessment. Again, we want to support the student at the Tier 1 and Tier 2 level. Adding to the statistics of 877 SSTs last year, 47% of those students were referred for assessment. 19% of those students were eligible for special education services. So we're looking at, can we do more at the Tier 1, Tier 2 at earlier stages in their elementary careers so that we can intervene and hopefully bridge that gap sooner. Yes. Did I answer your question, Mr. Unger?
I think you did. Okay. And seeing no more comments from the board, I'll bring it back. This could be a first reading, or if somebody would like to make a motion to approve this board policy, I would entertain that.
I think Mr. Quisenberry's light was on before mine.
Mr. Quisenberry.
I'll move approval of this policy.
And I'll second.
We have a motion by Mr. Quisenberry and a second by Mrs. Roger to approve item number 6. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 6-0. Let's move on to item number 7, approval to participate in countywide demographic study related to California Voting Rights Act, CVRA. This would be our second meeting. Dr. Prater?
Thank you very much. I recall from our last meeting that there was some confusing language in the last document, and I apologize for that. So I brought out the big guns, and our legal counsel, Ms. Patty Andreen, is here, just in case. So what you have in front of you in this particular item is what we feel is the more accurate version of what I'm asking you to approve. And based on advice of our counsel and discussions held at the board meetings of March 16th, 2010 and August 17th, 2010, San Luis Coastal agreed to use the results of the 2010 National Census and undertake a demographic study to determine the risk of liability under the California Voting Rights Act. And just so you know, in order for us to save money, the superintendents within our county got together facilitated by Dr. Julian Crocker, and we agreed to bring it to our own boards to sort of act together and as a group, and this would save all of us substantial money. So we are asking you to approve our participation in a countywide demographic study related to the California Voting Rights Act.
Mrs. Andreen, do you have anything to add?
Thank you, Mr. Unger, Patty Andreen. I just wanted to say that the rest of the school districts in the county have approved it, with the exception of this board and Lucia Marr, who are hearing it tonight. And Lozano Smith is reducing our normal fees to participate in this because we think it's important that everybody have accurate information so they can make the best possible decisions on this. And we do have a very, very busy demographer, but I think we're going to get his attention better having 12 districts do it at once than if we tried to piecemeal it, because statewide this is happening now with the new data from the census. So it seems like a good time to do it, and this seems like the most appropriate vehicle for the board to participate in this kind of a study. And I do have time to answer questions if you like.
Okay, I don't see any questions. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to bring it back to the board. Mrs. Sheffer?
I would move that we approve to participate in the countywide demographic study related to CVRA this time.
Okay, we have a motion. Do we have a second motion on this? Mr. Buckman?
I'd make the motion to approve consent items 8, 10, 11, 12, and 13.
Okay, we have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
Seconded by Mr. Quisenberry. Is there any discussion from the public? And seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 6-0. Mrs. Roger, item number 9.
I pulled this at the last moment
only because I noticed, and I wanted to make mention of the fact that this item 9 refers to the reappointment of the CSEA nominee to the Personnel Commission, and that person is Gail Sears. She has been a long-serving member of the Personnel Commission on behalf of our classified employees, and has graciously agreed to serve another term if nominated or if reappointed. And I just think that we should acknowledge her long service to the Personnel Commission and her willingness to continue. So that said, I'll move approval of item 9.
Do we have a second on that?
I'll second.
I'm going to go with Mrs. Sheffer this time. Seconded by Mrs. Sheffer. Any other discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 6-0. Let's move on to item number 15, advanced agenda. Is there anybody that would like to talk about advanced agenda? I would. Dr. Prater, I would like some information on our mileage policy, please. And I would be fine with that in a Friday packet to start, and I'd like to see what that looks like, please.
I will pull that together.
Great, thank you very much. Seeing nobody else on that, let's move to item number 16, which is reports by board members. Do we have any reports by board members? Mr. Quisenberry.
I just want to mention that I had the opportunity to attend the countywide FFA competition for the opening and closing of meetings. Over 300 students were at Morro Bay High School on the 5th of October, and it was hosted by Morro Bay High School under the direction of Peggy Flynn and Linda Todd, And it was my pleasure to participate in the judging of the students. They do a wonderful job of teaching students how to manage a meeting. So I wanted to mention that. And I also wanted to mention the... I had an opportunity today to visit the science labs at San Luis High. Mr. Dave Buckmoyer showed me through the facilities and explained his teaching methods and so forth. But they're looking a little worn and dated. So just a comment I wanted to make that we might want to think about that in the future. Also, I did want to mention that the County Teacher of the Year and the Teachers of the Years for the various districts, that they're the tip of an iceberg. Now, that sounds a little menacing in some respects, if you remember the Titanic, but what I'm thinking is that it's the fact that more of the iceberg is unseen than is seen, and that there are literally thousands of Teachers of the Year. And they recognize that, the county teachers and the district teachers of the year, they recognize the support of their colleagues and their families and the community, and I thought it was a wonderful affair, and I just wanted to make those comments. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Quisenberry. Dr. Eisendrath Rogers.
Yes, and Mr. Quisenberry and I were also at the Laguna Middle School Science Lab a few weeks ago in Jim Nett's classroom, his EL classroom. And, Sarita was also there helping and actually being lab partners to some of the students there. And my Rosando did a fabulous job of making his soda and Mentos explode. And I, too, was just very touched by the teachers' comments last night and the comments about the teachers. The teachers were very modest, actually, but the comments about the teachers throughout the district and throughout the county who were nominated. And it does make us appreciate the passion that goes into the daily work of the teachers and in front of our students and how much I appreciate everything our teachers do for us.
Great, and I don't see any more comments, so we will adjourn this meeting. Thank you very much, everyone.